Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Hopefully you did rest your bones well last night. But the CDC reports 14.5% of us had trouble falling asleep and do most days. Percentage of adults who have trouble staying asleep increased as family income decreases and as a place of residence becomes more rural. Some very interesting facts about sleep or the lack thereof. I think a lot of people have trouble getting a proper night's sleep. So I thought on this week's Weekend Health segment, we would talk about the sleep. And Dr. Phyllis Z is joining us today. Dr. Z is the chief of sleep medicine at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. Dr. Z, thank you very much for joining us. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
So, are you seeing that more and more people are having trouble just getting a good old night's sleep?
Yes, absolutely. I think this is part of the reason why our clinic is so busy, is that there's especially, I think, you know, even during and certainly after the pandemic, there's an increasing, across not just the United States, but really across the world, increasing number of individuals who have difficulty falling asleep, and as we get older, also difficulty staying asleep.
Why is it that as we get older, that becomes a problem? I remember my grandmother saying that she just couldn't sleep more than a couple of hours anymore as she got into her later years.
Yes, as we get older, we have more medical and psychiatric conditions, right, which can negatively affect sleep. But also just with healthy aging, our sleep patterns change so that there's more fragmentation of your sleep, really more difficulty maintaining sleep after the first 2 or 3 hours of sleep. Some of that, you know, in women during menopause, that could be hormonal changes that are occurring. And also just our lifestyle, maybe we're not exercising as much and not getting enough light during the day. All of those things can affect your sleep, not to mention that your clock, your biological clock as you get older, also gets a little bit earlier. So what we call advances a bit, and that can predispose people, older adults, to waking up earlier than they would want to.
That's very interesting. The CDC finding that the changing of the environment could have an effect on that. Do you find that as well, that the environment has an effect on people's sleep habits?
Yes, the environment can, especially if, you know, with global warming, having to sleep in warmer temperatures, especially indoors, and for that matter, your outdoor temperature, because we tend to sleep better when the temperature, the ambient temperature, is cooler.
Mm-hmm.
So that can certainly affect if you don't have air conditioning, for example, and or you're living, you know, your bedroom is near the attic, for example, it does get quite warm. And there is data, there's evidence that with global warming, that there is also a increase in sleep, a poor sleep quality.
Yeah, I would imagine also that what's the best way to put this? Your emotions, your home environment, your work environment, stress, having things on your mind in this world in which we're living now that's so crazy that people have so much going on in their minds that it's very difficult to get into a comfortable sleep pattern.
You're absolutely right. I think that not just the environment, you know, we also have more light during the night. We have all our, you know, phones and all our wearables, you know, that can also affect your sleep. But clearly, you know, the environment, your work schedule, the stress, So we tend to think of sleep not just as a trouble sleeping, but it's really a 24-hour problem. Like you said, it starts from the day, right, from the time you wake up. The stressors, our ability and our inability to deal with all of that gets then taken into the night, and then we can't shut our minds down during the night when we're trying to get to sleep, and or we worry about things as we're going into sleep with things that we have to do the next day that will probably wake us up in the middle of the night.
Sleep apnea is something that you hear more and more about every day, where people aren't breathing properly while they're sleeping, and they're forced to wear these horrible masks. I was diagnosed with sleep apnea and tried the mask, and it actually made my sleep worse with this big contraption on my face. I'm told that things are a little bit better now, so I'm supposed to come into your lab for a sleep test to get that checked out.
Right.
But talk about that. I mean, that's also a problem, it seems, more and more now, isn't it? Sleep apnea.
Absolutely. I think that anyone who has difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep, just don't toss it up to, you know, I just have insomnia, which is really important, but it could be also a sign of sleep apnea. Oftentimes it starts with a loud snoring, but it is really an important condition to diagnose and to effectively treat, because it is a very important risk factor for heart disease, for high blood pressure, diabetes, and for that matter, even now, recent data shows that it's a risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. So it's really important to get that treated. And it's quite common, especially as we get into the middle age and into older age.
Yeah. Is it still that big contraption that you have to strap onto your face? Or have they made some improvements with that?
Yeah, it really does depend a couple of things. You know, of course, patient preference, but also importantly, how severe your sleep apnea is. If it's very severe, if it's, you know, your oxygen is going down, you know, a lot during the night, then CPAP, which is the contraption that you talked about, would be the first line of therapy, because we know that when properly used and effective, it can be very effective in pretty much getting rid of the apnea events that you have during the night. But there are other treatments that have evolved in the last several years. One is if you have mild sleep apnea, the oral appliance, something that your dentist can fit you for, can also be useful. Right. So that, especially if you have a lot of difficulty sleeping while you're on your back, that can be helpful. Then there's surgery, right? There's surgical approaches such as this stimulator, the electrical stimulator to your tongue, which then works during the night, and it prevents this opening. It increases the opening of your upper airway. So that's called the Inspire device. So that's something that has become available in the last, you know, 5 or plus years, a little more popular. But that is if you failed, right, CPAP. And it's really important that, like you, come into, you know, talk to some sleep experts and try to figure out why it is uncomfortable, why it is not working, because there are many things that one can do to make that mask more comfortable. And also there are many, many different kinds of masks now on the market that would be more reasonable and, you know, more comfortable for each of the individuals. And that will differ between people.
Yeah, well, I'll take care of that in coming days for myself. But in the meantime, 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. Dr. Phyllis Zee is the chief of sleep medicine at Northwestern Memorial Hospital. 312-981-7200. So, you know, we talked about many of the reasons that people are not sleeping well. What can they do to improve their sleep?
Yes, if it's a chronic problem, you should of course see your doctor and inform them about your sleep issue, because sleep could be also a symptom of maybe an underlying condition, such as maybe you have sleep apnea, maybe your blood pressure is too high. But having said that, I think all of us can improve our sleep by changing our environment. If it's too hot, keeping our rooms dark, cool as much as possible. And during the day, get bright light in the morning, like today. Go out, take a walk in the morning if you can. regular exercise at the same time of day, and try to keep your sleep-wake times around the same time every day. So don't deviate much more than 1 hour during your work days, for example, when you go to bed and when you wake up, and certainly not more than 2 hours during the weekends or days off, because that regularity has been shown to be quite important to maintaining good sleep.
Yeah, naps are fantastic in the middle of the day, but do they disrupt your sleep at night?
Well, there's the good and the bad of napping. You're absolutely right. Napping can be refreshing. If you plan the nap, if this is something that you're planning and saying, well, I'm going to take a 20-minute or 15 or 30-minute shut-eye and relax during the day, that's great. That's been shown to be beneficial, especially for older adults, and it does not seem to interfere with your sleep. However, if you're napping because you're so exhausted, you're so sleepy because you're sleep-deprived continuously, that is a sign that you're sleep-deprived, and therefore you should try to get more sleep during the night. And, of course, sleep disorders can play a role in that. If you have insomnia and you have difficulty falling asleep during the night, then a nap may actually decrease your ability to fall asleep. So it really does depend on the individual. But generally, a bit of a shut-eye in the middle of the afternoon can be useful.
What about eating your dinner and then going to sleep? Does the time between dinner and bedtime make any difference on whether or not you're going to get a good night's sleep?
Yes, it can. And my rule of thumb is dim your lights out 2 to 3 hours before you go to bed, and also stop eating 3 hours before your bedtime.
Because your digestive system is working and keeping you awake while you're trying to go to sleep?
Yeah, well, it could be your digestive system, but more importantly, your glucose levels are going to be elevated, and that could affect your ability to sleep. And when you're eating late, it also signals your biological clock that this is early, and therefore that could also delay your timing of your sleep and your biological rhythm. And if you eat late, your glucose levels may stay up much longer during the night, whereas during sleep, you're supposed to be fasting, right? Supposed to be fasting, and that can help regulate. So there's studies to show that if you eat too close to bedtime, or especially your dinner, a large meal close to bedtime, that can increase the risk for diabetes.
We will have to do this again another time, doctor, because we're out of time right now. But I think it's a fascinating subject, and one for which there is a lot of interest. I hope we can get you to join us again another time.
Happy to do so. Thank you.
Really appreciate you joining us. So interesting. Dr. Phyllis Zee, who is the Chief of Sleep Medicine, Northwestern Memorial Hospital.